And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
And I'm Daniel Keller.
Daniel Keller, my brother.
That's right.
Long last. A lot of people may not know, you're also a developer at Microsoft.
That's right. I work over in the Office division and filling in for Dan while he's doing something.
My other brother, Dan.
That's right.
Yeah, so Dan's actually down in, he's in California this week working on the West Coast Customs PR thing. I think that the episode of Project Detroit where they build a car on West Coast Customs, I think that comes out on Sunday, March 25th, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, cool.
So set your VCRs,
sure.
I suppose. Yep. But anyway, jumping right into our top story. So, of course, Dan's out, so I get to set the agenda. And I decided to lead with the Team Foundation server story. So that's great. It's
sure.
My prerogative.
Your show.
My show. That's right. And so the Visual Studio Team Foundation Server 11 beta Power Tools are now available. So Power Tools... They provide a lot of additional functionality outside of what we ship in the box with Team Foundation Server. One of those is, of course, the MISCI provider, which allows you to connect with older clients up to Team Foundation Server 11. These power tools, some of them also start to work with the hosted version of Team Foundation Server running on the Windows Azure platform. But these are available now. There's a few more that are coming, but now you can go get the first wave of power tools. Probably the most popular, of course, is the process template editor. So if you need to get into Team Foundation Server, change the work items, change kind of the graphical workflow of anything in there, now you can do that.
Yeah, these are probably the things on the team that they didn't get a chance to finish before, and so they use all the time. So they packed them up and shipped them.
Yeah, definitely. The other nice thing about not including them in the box is it allows them to iterate a little bit faster than mm-hmm. the shipped product. So that's really cool. Speaking of Visual Studio 11 beta, there's a multi-part blog series talking about performance and how that's kind of a big thing.
Yeah, these guys, this article or blog post digs really deep into the improvements that they made in Visual Studio 11 in debugging. Mm-hmm. And it's really neat to see the big investment that they've made in some of the older tech that we have around native debugging.
Right.
So that was
C++ developers?
That's right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they were able to make some huge performance improvements there. And they're really focused on just making sure that the time it takes the developer to write code, then hit F5 and run it, and then debug it
right.
is as short as possible.
That virtuous cycle that you do 100,000 times a day.
If not more. Sure.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's really cool. And another thing that that people may not have noticed is that if you load a solution that has 100 projects in it, they're actually loading that solution asynchronously so that it loads the projects that it knows you're going to be most apt to use first, and then it loads everything else in the background. So lots of really cool things here. I think one of the number one trending requests that people had about Visual Studio 2010 was to make it faster, because a lot of the work that we did by moving over to the XAML WPF shell in Visual Studio 2010 meant that in some scenarios we were starting from ground zero when it came to performance. So the team really took your feedback to heart, and Visual Studio 11 beta is super snappy. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I think one of the themes of today's show and one of the themes of the work that they're doing is that they're reanalyzing all of the parts mm-hmm. of Visual Studio, whether it's help or UI or whatever, is they're taking a look at it.
The help about dialogue is awesome now. It's really, really good. Very feature rich. So that's cool. And then speaking of, you know, the zillions of features out there, Scott Hanselman had a nice blog post where he said these are features that no one noticed. Obviously, he's being hyperbolic here, but you know, there's not been a lot of coverage here on some of the features that are in the Express product now.
Yeah, and some of them are really big improvements. For example, the instead of the ASP.NET development environment, that running a version of or a web server that's not exactly
the development web server, I think is what we called it, Cassini back in the day.
Right.
Yeah.
It's now running the same server web core that IIS runs, and so you as a developer, you have higher confidence that mm-hmm. the code that you're writing and debugging on your dev machine is going to work the same out in the production environment.
Right. So. Yeah. Absolutely. Another one that's interesting is unit testing is now baked into all of the Express products.
Oh.
So that's cool. And then the other thing is that they moved some of the projects, I think maybe all the projects, into what are called V6 files. It's kind of the extensibility system for Visual Studio. So what that allows them to do now is more rapidly iterate on those project templates, so they mm-hmm. can ship new ones to you in the future. And if there's a new architecture model, MVC was obviously a new one that came out in the last kind of wave, mm-hmm. They could ship you new versions of that, and you could just download it, and you've got file new. Whatever.
Yeah, and I think Scott mentions in here that they've improved the round trip experience too between different versions of Visual
yes.
Studio.
Yes.
So you don't need to worry about going through the upgrade experience and mm-hmm. then, oh, well, what if I need to go back to Visual Studio 2010?
Yeah.
That all just works.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So if you're like the one guy on your team who's always trying out new technologies and you're the first one that kind of wants to jump on Visual Studio 11, traditionally you would have had to drag your whole team or maintain two separate project and solution files, whereas now you can just do that full round tripping between you do need SP1, Visual Studio 2010 SP1 and Visual Studio 11 beta. Now you can open a project and save it, and I can open a project and save it, and we can just party on.
Yeah, that's right. And back to our former point about performance, mm-hmm. He also mentions in here that things like the add references UI has been updated to use multi-threading.
Yes.
Or
yes.
So no longer do you have to say, I need to add a reference and then
go
and
get a
groan
cup of coffee.
About it. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly. Those are the little paper cuts that are being removed there.
Yep.
So that's cool. So Channel 9 Highlight, our friend Robert Green had a toolbox episode with Paul O'Rear, mm-hmm. And they were talking about some of the improvements to Visual Studio 11 Help, which was another big top request from people that were complaining about Visual Studio 2010.
Yeah, this is great. Traditionally, it'd be the case that if you wanted to install Help, well, you were adding a whole bunch of install time mm-hmm. onto your installation that already took a long time to begin with, and now what they're doing is after you've booted Visual Studio for the first time, they will, in the background, start loading a minimal set of documentation. And in Visual Studio 2010, at the end of install, like, you've got a green checkbox, and you said finish as quickly as you could, so you could
yeah.
start working, right?
Yeah.
But now, so there was a box in the corner that said, click here to install Help, and nobody noticed it. And so they've taken that to heart and started doing a better job inside the UI of bridging the gap between the web content and the stuff that's installed in your machine.
Yeah.
And by default, every machine will have a minimum level of documentation available.
So you don't have to go out to the web every single time.
Yeah, especially if you're on an airplane or something like that where
yep.
you don't have that. And
yep.
you say, well, what exceptions can this thing throw?
Right, exactly. Very, very good. So we're going to talk more about async in a minute, but before we do, my friend Joanna Mason wrote a really nice post that talks about the XAML designers and how those can be used to build XAML-based applications, whether that's WPF or Silverlight or Metro-style applications. And she talks a little bit about the differences in behavior between those different application targets. So this is, if you're a XAML designer, especially if you use Blend, this is a really great article from Joanna, who's on the development team building Blend and the related designer tools that you should definitely go through.
Yep.
And combining XAML and DirectX.
Yeah, this is huge. So from within XAML, you can now reference DirectX APIs that you could only get at before using native code.
Mm.
And so I think this is a huge paradigm shift because you no longer have to worry about picking the wrong direction for your product.
Right.
We've all been there, right? You start going down one technology train, and then
J sharp.
I can't tell you how much code I had to convert into C sharp. Here you can comfortably go down the road of XAML and say, well, if I reach the point with my application where performance of graphics is a big deal, I can just start using the DirectX stuff. It's not a pivotal shift for your application.
Right. This is awesome. And obviously a lot of games are written in DirectX and all other kind of high performance applications. And now they can be ported over so that they work right within the Metro style kind of Windows 8 application world. So that's awesome. That's huge. That's one that I've heard a lot of people ask about coming out of the Build conference and the developer preview. So it's nice to see that this is now baked into the consumer preview and the Visual Studio beta that you can start taking advantage of this.
Yep.
So that's awesome.
Make your angry birds faster.
Yes. Faster, angrier, everything. So keeping apps fast and fluid, we keep talking about fast and fluid, and a key principle behind a lot of the Windows 8 design decisions is this fast and fluid design. And in order to support that, obviously async is a very important principle about that. So this article actually takes you through kind of strategically why async is a great solution there. And you had a quote that you really liked here.
This article talks a lot about the history of it too, and how it's really nowadays more than before, the user's going to be upset if your application doesn't follow their finger. And so this article talks about how you know, instead of the default answer being synchronous calls, now you have to look at the default answer being asynchrony. Mm-hmm. And not only it's unfortunate that you know, some of the older calling conventions for calling asynchrony were a little more difficult, but nowadays it's a lot easier to call asynchrony. Mm. For instance, they added an await keyword that makes it a whole lot easier to put right. that into your application.
Right.
So the default answer for developers should really be, how do I make this asynchrony? Not
Not whether I should.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And you experienced this on your own team this week, where you kind of, someone said, why are you using right. threads here? You should
yeah,
be using.
Yeah, I was using threads to do a parallel upload to a thing, and they said, well, that's not a CPU intensive thing, so you should be using asynchronous.
Yeah.
So, I got dev pwned on that one.
Nice. And I don't know if we mentioned, but you work on the Office Web Apps team, right?
Yeah, I work on the team that sort of is the data center infrastructure for them. So.
Okay.
I don't work a lot in the user-facing stuff, but I work okay. in the background to make sure that the services has as cool. high of uptime as possible.
Cool. That's awesome. Yeah. And so, related article, this is Jay Kimball, and he takes you through with some more code examples behind what we were just talking about, which is using await and async and all those sorts of things. So this is a nice little sister article there.
Yeah, I thought this had a really great example in there of how to make of the old way and the new way, and mm-hmm. specifically around HTTP web request. So great example just to go see how to make a web request in an
cool.
asynchronous fashion.
Cool, which is a perfect example for async, because the web can take some indeterminate period of time while you're waiting for that to come back.
Sure.
You need to get some other work
right?
done. Yeah, exactly. So. Exactly. So this is one that that people may have noticed at some of the earlier announcements, that there's a WordPress application that's available, or that was coming for the Windows 8 Marketplace. Mm-hmm. And so the news here, it's not directly tied to developers, but I know a lot of developers follow a lot of WordPress blogs. The WordPress application is now available, but what is interesting is that the source code is available over on Subversion as well.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, you can grab that.
Is this more about reading blogs, or is this more about writing?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So this is primarily focused on reading blogs. There is a bit in here that allows you to quickly reblog someone else's blog
okay.
and kind of share that with the world. But they have said that the whole experience around authoring blogs is something that they're working on in the future to make a great Metro style experience around. So right now this is reading and then re-aggregating, I guess, if you will.
Yeah, I really felt this app illustrated sort of the Metro style
right.
very well.
Yeah.
And it kind of changes. I mean, we think of blogs, we think of RSS, and we think
yep.
of text-based readers, but this is beautiful. It
yeah.
really is.
Yeah, and it's making me hungry, too. There's a stack of pancakes right there and a salad.
Yeah.
I need to go get some lunch, clearly. So this is a nice little add-in for Visual Studio 2010, and it basically remaps your some of those advanced buttons and scroll wheels on your mouse to do some different things.
Yeah, if you've ever accidentally found yourself holding down Control while you were scrolling, then you found that you're zooming in or zooming out on
right.
your code, and
right.
you're like, well, that's not something I do very often, so
right.
that's not all that useful to me. So this disables that and then allows it so that control mouse scroll. Sorry, am I saying that right?
Yeah.
The wheel.
Yeah.
Makes it so that you do page up, page down instead. So
which is much, much more useful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or much commonly,
exactly.
much more commonly useful. And then the other one too is to take some mice have the back and the forward buttons, and it maps this so that it actually does the back and forward right within Visual Studio, so you can go back to the file you were just looking at and forward and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's you know, especially because Alt Tab is not exactly available.
Yeah.
In
exactly.
Visual Studio,
so. Yep. Exactly. Good point. So model view model, you guys use that in your infrastructure at all?
We're not there yet, no.
Not yet? Okay. So model view model, obviously really popular for, you know, WPF applications, Windows 8 applications. And so I personally have struggled trying to understand model view model in the past. It's kind of a lot of terms. That why is view listed twice? I don't know. This is a really good article to kind of give you an overview of model view model and kind of some background into the design principles, if you will.
Yeah, I think they do a great job of walking you through an example of, say, a contacts application and showing mm-hmm. you, and then going on to explain the pros and cons of this approach. And,
right.
I've noticed that one of the big pros is testability, right?
That's, oh, sure.
So they talk a good deal about that, of how it's much easier to test an application when you can sort of
isolate those layers. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good point, and that should always come up when you talk about MVVM. You guys use a lot of JavaScript? on yep. Office web apps.
Sure.
So this is I like these kind of, you know, 30 days, 15 minutes on your lunch break kind of things to learn all about jQuery. jQuery yep. is obviously a very popular library for using JavaScript.
Yeah, you know, and the truth is any well-rounded developer needs to, while we might not be all excited about JavaScript and getting away from some of the managed code or type-safe code that we're used to,
right.
you know, this is going to come up for every developer at some point, and
right.
this is where the world's going, and so I think this is a great way in a short amount of time and splitting it across many days to go learn jQuery.
Yeah, so. Yeah, definitely, and we were talking about earlier before we started the show, there's also ScriptSharp is out there if you want to continue to write your .NET code and kind of compile that down to JavaScript. It's kind of a cool approach as well, yep. So that's really cool. Friend of the show, Martin Woodward. This is kind of a flashback to some of our other talks that we like to focus from some of the most popular conferences that have come out. And this is Martin talking about collaborating across technology borders.
Yeah, Martin himself lives in Ireland, and he works with a team in North Carolina. And so mm-hmm. so he's the perfect guy to go talk about how to collaborate across those borders.
And he works for Microsoft and writes Java code. And so talking about other borders. So
sure.
So anyway, this is a really nice article. And of course, his slant, he's on the Team Foundation server team. So he's talking about kind of the offerings we have for TFS developers there. But always good talk and very funny, I might add.
Yeah, just watch. If you don't care about the topic, just listen for the jokes.
It's great jokes. Very good. Very good. So picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
Woo! So my pick of the week, this is actually something that we just announced. It's the fact that CodePlex is now going to be supporting Git. If you want to start a CodePlex project using Git, you can now do that. CodePlex, so that people understand the history, it was started on day one as being built on Team Foundation server. Mm-hmm. And then we got some requests that people wanted to kind of embrace a DVCS style of source control for some of their projects. And so we started supporting Mercurial. And now Git has probably become, I think it's safe to say, it's become the most popular DVCS system out there.
Yep.
And so now if you're starting a new CodePlex project, you can choose to make it based on Git. And the really nice thing about this is that you're not sacrificing the work items that you would be used to from Team Foundation server. So you can still get issues, you can still track builds, you can still do all those things, and then they'll implement that behind the covers. The one thing that you don't get, of course, is that you won't be able to interface with that from within Team Explorer, within Visual
sure.
Studio,
yeah.
talking to, because it's not TFS behind the scenes, it's
yep.
CodePlex, right?
Yep.
Or it's Git. So.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Excited
yeah.
for that.
And for you ready for this? Your first pick of the week ever? Yes?
That's right. I'm ready. For the Not Dan pick of the week. So my pick of the week was about the At Home with Windows Azure program. If you haven't tried Azure yet, this is a great way to go try to do it. Because mm-hmm. essentially what they're saying here is get a free trial, for
yep.
starters,
yep.
And follow these videos about how to get a sample app up and running.
Mm-hmm.
And the great part is that at the end of your getting the app up and running, you're helping the at-home program that's run out of Stanford, where they're doing protein folding and trying to figure out Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and different types of cancers. So after you get up and running, take the time between when you get your first app ready to go and deployed to help the medical industry. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. I really like this. I haven't ever actually seen this approach before. It's better than a Hello World or a spinning tea kettle or something like this, because
sure.
you're actually helping people.
You got to quit writing that spinning tea kettle app.
I know. But this is cool. And you and I actually, we got our DNA profiled at 23andme.com. And it did confirm that he's my biological brother, so that was a disappointment. But other than that, it's lots of really interesting data in here, and DNA is just one of those areas that's going to continue to get, you know, more and more interesting over time.
Yeah, and this takes me back to the days of when first SETI first came out, and we were analyzing space signals. And
oh, yeah.
But I think this has a little more practicality to everyday life.
So you say. I think, you know, hold your breath. But thank you very much. Thanks for being on the show, Dan.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And we'll see you next week.
Thanks.